Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 207 for December 10th, 2018. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but you can also listen to the audio only podcast version of all episodes of the Timing Research shows on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe there. If you have not had a chance to look at today's report yet, you can go to timingresearch.com/reports and view either the PDF or the web version there. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and I have Michael Filiguera back to moderate today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Thank you, David, and good afternoon for those on the East Coast and good morning for those out here on the West Coast. And today should be a really exciting or informative show. We've got a lot to talk about. So I'm going to introduce our panel today. We have Damon Pavlatos with us. We have Glenn Thompson and we have Jim Kenny. And sorry, now go back and I'll do this correct. Damon is with FuturePathTrading.com. Glenn Thompson is with PacificTradingAcademy.com. Jim Kenny is with TheOptionProfessor.com. And I am Michael Filiguera and I am with LogicalSignals.com. So we'll do it in round robin fashion, again, beginning with Damon, then Glenn, then Jim. And let's introduce ourselves, let people know who you are, where you are, what you do. And we'll start with Damon.
Hi, I'm Damon Pavlatos with Future Path Trading, also the owner of Photon Trader, or founder. And I have a brokerage firm called Future Path Trading, started about 41 years ago. The firm was about 20 years old, but I started on the floor 41 years. And I've been doing this for quite a long time, so I figure I might as well finish up my life this way. I enjoy it. I've done everything from ran companies to traded on the floor, had four different seats. And then I decided about 20 years later to 25 years later to leave the floor and create a electronic trading version that we can offer, because previous to that, I had my firm that I owned was on the floor of the exchange, and we were executing for big institutions and traders such as Tudor Jones and Lewis Bacon, Monroe Trout, kind of goes on. And in fact, Linda Rashke was one of the funds, and full disclosure, after being a client for 20 years, we decided to hook up and got married. So anyway, that's a little bit about me. And currently, I still have Future Path Trading, the brokerage firm. We clear through six firms and offer all kinds of services, and we own Photon Trader as well, which is a front-end execution software. So that pretty much, I didn't want to take up too much time.
Thank you. Yeah. And Glenn.
Yeah, glad to be here once again. I've been trading. I started, I guess, on this as a broker at Merrill Lynch about, it's been so long, not quite as long as what Damon mentioned. I'm typically used to being the oldest person here. But in any case, I started as a registered rep with Merrill about 36 years ago. Serendipity had its place. I was on a different career trajectory, and as events had, as are known to turn, I shifted my career path. But about a year into my process at Merrill, I kind of transitioned, and I knew I wanted to become a trader. At the outset of my career, I didn't know the difference between a broker and a trader. And then when I got involved, I realized the distinction. And after that, I worked, I got licensed on the futures side, worked for a company called ICS, International Commodity Services, and worked, bumped around from one commodity trading firm to another. Got into Forex. I was still back on Wall Street at that time. Fast forwarding to the present, I moved to the West Coast, where I am currently. I've been here now for 20 years, and it was basically trading my own accounts at that point. For a few years. And then about 15, 16 years ago, got an opportunity to start teaching with the people at Pacific Trading Academy. And I've been working with them since their inception, which is, again, 15, 16 years ago. So that's the salient points of my, my curve of career. The focus of what I do is technical. That said, from the trading perspective, I look for convergences and alignments between between all information. When I consider the perspective of a fundamental or a technical trader, I think they're just, it's just English verbiage to define the origin of the type of information. So you're looking for those convergences, and that would, I guess, greatly define my approach. So what I do now and have been doing in addition to trading my own accounts is basically teaching traders of all levels, beginners on one extreme, experts and everything in between, with an emphasis on what I do primarily. I start from the technical, the charts, and then I look for alignments. So yeah, that's a quick synopsis.
Thank you very much. And Jim.
Yes, I'm Jim Kenny. I've been conducting option seminars live and over the internet for decades, and I've educated thousands and thousands of people on how the uses and the risks of options work. And I have a podcast every Friday, gives you a weekly update. And if you've been tuning in, which I encourage you to do, and also tell your friends to do it as well, I've been discussing strategies such as collars, starting when we're up at 2,900 on the S&P and 2,050 on Amazon. Because according to my work, we were very overbought up there, and the Fed's been normalizing interest rates. So obviously normalizing the stock market probably doesn't mean 3,500 on the S&P. So the collar strategy is a very big thing that I've been talking about. And so I do encourage people to tune in every Friday for the podcast.
And thank you. Thank you very much. And again, I'm Michael Filigera. I'm with LogicalSignals.com. That is my own website, which unfortunately continues to be under construction or reconstruction. I'm going to be moving it, just updating it and switching some of my business around a little bit and getting more back into writing. I do enjoy it, and so I'll be providing some type of commentary to go along with trading. I have been trading. I started as an options market maker on the Pacific Exchange in 1979, and I have traded here in San Francisco. I've traded in London, Amsterdam, Germany, and then I came back to San Francisco. So all in all, I have about 40 years going now, and I'm now no longer, I'd still trade options, but that's not my main focus. My main focus right now is I day trade, and I'm doing that in the futures. And so we're going to jump right into what we need to talk about today, because, of course, it's a very interesting time in the markets. There are a lot of things going on that should affect, and at to what degree or to what level is yet to be seen. But we have a lot to kind of talk about today. So beginning again, we'll do it in round robin fashion. And Damon, I'll start with you, and then we'll go Damon and Glenn and then Jim. And question number one is, which direction do you think the S&P 500 index will move from this coming Monday's open to Friday's close? So it's December 10th through the 14th. And then rate your confidence, as long as you're doing that, we'll go and answer question two right in there. Rate your confidence in the answer to question one by giving us a probability of that you're correct. And Damon, we're going to start with you.
All right. Well, the last three sessions I did for me came out good, but you know, and I was at least correct on that. But this one makes it really difficult to obviously to forecast. But based on, you know, what I'm looking at, by the way, I put this risk disclosure because I have to because of the regulations, you know, for the NFA.
Right.
And so hopefully you understand all this, and you've probably seen these before. So I'm going to throw up just a couple of charts and tell you what I'm thinking. And but it is a very pivotal week, I would say, especially even this day. So let me see. This is where I came from. I just threw these up here. My screens, but let's go into, well, I just threw up a monthly. It's really interesting. If we close, in which we went below the last 3 months, it looks like we broke it today. But if we close back above, I want to say 26, 30 or 35 in that area, I'm going to say that the market can pull back for the week and you could see some short covering. In my experience of being a trader on the floor for all these years, and I've traded the 87 crash, I've traded every crash actually in every 2008. This could be possibly that last little push down and get all the shorts out. You know, and you know, because it's easy to look at it and go, oh, there's a big M formation on the dailies. you know, the market should go down. You could see over here. I don't know. Can you see my arrow when I do this?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you can see here, we actually did have solid divergences on the monthlies. You see, we made a higher high in a month and then boom, a lower high here. And this is a 3-10 oscillator with the 3 and the 10 and the difference between that and a 16 smooth for those who look at that. But anyway, so this is pivotal. We could have brought in, got out a lot of, you know, longs in the market, had some margin selling on the opening, and this may be a short-term bottom, only short-term, because I feel that the market could rebound. I've seen this a million times, and it was a good climax today. It depends where we close. And if we close above, I want to say around 30 to 35, then I could see a pullback and this week could, you know, start to recover a bit. But I will say that we are in dangerous territories. If we close even where we're at or below, I think the market can have a huge down move through the week. So this can be a continuation. And so that's hard for me to say, like just today, to say that by the end of the week we'll be up or down. It depends on the close of today. I think today's a pivotal day, like I said. If we close even positive today, then I can, you know, I feel 60-70%, I'd say 70% of chance that we'll rally through the week and, you know, maybe rally up and then consolidate in the middle somewhere, because the market is definitely in that type of a zone. Here's a, I'll just flip through a couple of other things. Here's a weekly chart. And when you break through the 30-week low and you close this many times below, that's pretty negative. But, you know, this is today before we broke this low, but this is using volume candles. And today's volume wasn't probably that great compared to other days when we broke major support. So I don't feel confident yet that, the, you know, this will continue this week. We could hold this low, possibly. And it all depends where we close. Right. You know, here's a weekly. Now, what's interesting on the weekly is if you look at this low, which was the low of November 16th, and this current high, we pretty much are halfway back, or not halfway back, but 382 back from the top. So there's quite a few reasons that this support level may hold. We broke it today, but we have to close below there, especially if we close below 2600. I'm going to be really worried about the market. Okay. But I think the market could rebound.
And the probability again, so if I'm just filling in the blanks,
sure,
for you, but going along with you, if the market ends up, the S&P ends up closing above 2630, mm-hmm, then you're feeling pretty strongly that we're likely going to just rebound for the balance of the week, or just kind of trade in a tighter range but higher.
Correct. Okay. Because I, you know, this many attempts to these lows, you know, you're going to, I'm sure that there was a lot of margin selling. There was a lot of panic coming into the new, you know, week and anxiety. Right. But this, you know, I've seen this for 41 years. I've been through it so much.
Right.
These retests of these spike lows on the monthlies are very, very difficult to close below it and get confirmation. And if we do, then we've got another 10-15% possibly by the end of the year. So,
wow. Okay.
I'm mildly bullish unless we close above 2630, then I'll be more bullish for the week.
Okay.
But if we close below 26 even, let's just say, which is that level that I was looking at, mm-hmm, this could be a really bad week for the market. So it's kind of pivotal now. We got to see.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. And Glenn.
Right. Okay. So I agree with Damon today. I think today is, I don't know that this is going to be an all important week. I think today in particular is a critical day to determine the trajectory for the market between now and next Wednesday. And there are two reasons why next Wednesday is of importance. Number one, it's a time point, and I have over 90% confidence that it will change. What I'm not certain of at this moment is it going to be a top or a bottom? And I think that the answer to that lies in where we end up at close today. The key number is 2603. Which is October 29's bottom. Depending on where we trend or end up at the consensus at the end of the session today, above or below 2603, the 1029 low point, will determine the trend between now and next Wednesday. I've got three cycles coming in for the 19th. I just checked this morning. I think that's the FOMC meeting. The Fed will be raising by a quarter of a point. I think that's pretty, or at least I expect 96% probability the Fed will raise rates one more time this year, next Wednesday at the meeting. Based on that, if I just use my just normal thoughts here in terms of what I'm expecting, again, the market will move into that meeting probably higher. So my answer is the market will close higher on Friday than today's open. I give it about a 60% probability. But the rationale for that is, you know, and I would raise that since we haven't closed, and I don't know if it will close as a, you know, a key reversal in the extreme, but more to the point is where does it close today with respect to that important October 29 bottom? If we're above it, we'll move higher into the meeting. If we're below, we'll move lower into next week's meeting on the 19th, and then that would be an important bottom. But I just checked my charts. If we're gaining some little buying coming in, and if we can continue into the close today, that would suggest in the extreme a key reversal. That would be a buy signal, and I think that will bring in some of the buyers, and then it will follow through for the rest of the week and into the meeting. And then we could have a pullback in response to what the Fed does next week. So I'm going to give it about a 60%. If, you know, if we were having this, the broadcast at the after the market closed, and we clearly had a strong close, then I would give it a higher percentage. Since that's the uncertainty and where I'm allowing for potential error to creep in. But okay, it is contingent on that. So I'll give it a 60% higher by the end of the week and continuing on into the middle of next week.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And Jim?
Yeah, basically we're continuing to see normalization, meaning the Fed said a while back we're going to normalize interest rates. So if you're at 2,900 on the S&P, 2,050 on Amazon, and P ratios are in the 50s and 100s area, there's nothing normal about that. And so that's what I was cautioning people when we were very high above the 200-day moving averages on all this stuff, mm-hmm. that the likelihood of it going back down was huge, because the word normalization out of the Fed means that normalization is going to go back into stocks. And that's the bigger picture. Right now, there's no doubt this is a very important day, and turnaround Tuesday, if you're bullish, had better happen. Because if it doesn't happen, like Damon and others were saying, there's a lot of problems underneath. My feeling is that it's possible that they went under 2,600 and grabbed all the stops, and the people who are making market can see possibly that the volume might be getting exhausted there. And so that could lead to a bit of a rally. Again, two things that I noticed on the way up and the way down was that the Russell and the transports were leading indicators to me. Meaning, if you look at when the market broke to the upside, the Russell and the transports led it. And when it rolled over to the downside, both of them led it. And today, both of those hit 52-week lows. There's nothing bullish about that. The only thing you're hoping for, if you're looking for a rally, is that the volume is exhausting here and that there is news this week on PPI and CPI and retail sales. And those are big numbers. And if they come in very, very robust, then there could be a bid underneath the market. And this move under 2,600, because there was a number mentioned of 2,603, there's no doubt 2,603 is a big number. And then in my mind, there's no doubt that this 2,580 is a big number. So we close above 2,603, very constructive. Where's your line in the sand? 2,580. If you're a trader, if you're a long-term holder and you've been listening to my podcast, you should be hedged at much higher levels and you should be watching a very ugly movie from the comfort of your easy chair. But you've got to know the strategies for hedging, the married puts, the collars, and then you got to put them on and don't be greedy and start worrying about protecting your assets as opposed to always trying to increase them.
Very, very, very well said. Thank you very much. And I would ask that we go into that a little bit deeper, a little bit later when we're going to be talking about indicators and that people use, because I think that's going to tie in very cleanly. For me, I'm actually not in disagreement with anything that has been said. I agree that the 2,600 level has been very, very important. I do not disagree with what Jim is adding, that the possibility that some big player pushed it down, dropped it below to trigger all the stops, and they ended up buying everything there. And then now it's up, up, and away, which may only be just a small corrective phase. But as what's already been laid out, there is a strong potential that the market will just tread water higher until next Wednesday. We also have year-end year-end coming in. Now, based on that year-end starts to come in and will likely start to kick in a little bit heavier, we could have a lot of people on the sidelines that don't want to take the positions any longer than what they already have. And so they may be looking to bail, but they want a stronger trigger. Now, whether that trigger is going to be 2,600 and below, right now, it's going to have to be below 2,680 because we got as low as 2580 because we got as low as 2583 this morning. So I think, yes, there's a lot on the line. I am going to continue to call it lower, and I'm going to give it a 65% probability of occurring. I think that if indeed today was a bit of manipulation and it's manipulated higher, I still don't feel that calling it lower is necessarily wrong. So I'm going to kind of hang tight with what I felt originally, and I'm basing mine more on pattern recognition and Elliott Wave. And when I take a look at the S&P, I do not disagree that if we're looking at a daily chart, the daily chart cleanly shows that M pattern that Damon mentioned. But I believe that what we've now just started to enter is the beginning of a third wave down. Now, it's a third within a larger corrective phase, but it is still the largest portion of this down phase. And in fact, it would be, if we're looking at things that subdivide, which in Elliott Wave, that means that the move is subdividing. It's not going to go straight. It goes down and bounces and, you know, so on and so forth. It would be a 3 of 3. So this tends to be the point of recognition. And that may have started that break below 2,600. That would certainly be a point of recognition, as if we're taking what our the other three panelists have said this morning, that the fact that broke that level, which is a high psychological level, it's a high technical level, and breaking below that would certainly put a cleaner picture on we're going down. Now, the fact that it didn't and it came back up, I don't know. You know, it puts me back in the same area that that Jim and Glenn and Damon are in saying that, can I say definitively? No, we can't, because there's now too many unknown factors sitting out there as to, again, where will they close it today? So if we see the sellers come back in towards the last hour and really start to bail again, as they did on Friday, then we all have our answer. We know what's going to happen. But I'm going to stick with lower, and I'm going to give it 65%. Moving along, and by the way, thank you, everybody. Those are all really great responses and good detail. Very, very good detail. I hope people are really listening and paying attention. Question number three is, for our answer to number one, please share what specific reasons you think the S&P will be heading in the direction you chose. Now, basis on what we've already said, guys, I think that a lot of this reason your answer to question one is pretty clear, because you backed it up with some reasoning. But let's just kind of highlight that, not going into as much detail, but let's highlight that so that people get a much clearer picture of what each one of us is saying and why. And I'm going to begin with Damon. So I know, Damon, that you gave some pretty good detail on levels and why. But if you can just encapsulate that and maybe just kind of restate some of it, that would be great. Damon.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. I was on mute. Well, you know, this is something, you know, the setup here, looking at the monthlies, you have for sure overall, you know, we have a major M formation, like you said. I do a little bit of everything. I use some moving averages. I use a reversal that you can see on the 5-minute chart here that I have up. This is a live photon 5-minute chart. I use a 30 high moving average and a 30 low, a 10 close. And I have the, this is more of a simple, you know, layout that I'm just showing you. But this is, you know, the volume. Let me see if I can, because I had computer problems, it wasn't as great for me today to have too many up here. But if you look at how we rejected this first low on the dailies, this one, there was no volume when we retested. It didn't get close. Today we had some volume, but we're below it. But still, you know, this is not gonna be a continuation unless there's volume below and a close below the last spike. Spikes are one of those things that when I was in the pit, you know, it was the old middle finger. If you got caught, you know, on a spike, if it went up and it spiked higher, it means you're probably the only one bidding at the high, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this spike that we first had down here is that level that you were talking about. I forgot who was talking about the 2603. I just rounded it off to 26. But yeah. A close below that usually would signify that that information is on its way at a monthly, let alone we have other, you know, this is the 30 low moving average. We spent a lot of time below it. So there's multiple reasons for the market, you know, to possibly have a continuation. But at this point, I think we're pretty pivotal on Monday here to see where we close if we're talking just this week. You know, when you go on beyond this week, overall, I am pretty bearish. I try to stay away from fundamentals. I've been a technical trader for 41 years. I started my charting services in 1979. I was trading for myself and selling it to traders and institutions on the floor. And I've been here before so many times. This is for sure a dangerous formation. And it all depends if we close below these monthlies and we have some volume going into it. That could start a whole other leg. And you can measure out that M formation from there.
Right. Okay. Glenn.
Okay. So I'm going to attempt to show a chart. Let's see. give me a second. All right. Can you guys see the chart that I've got a daily of the S&P, or have I hit the screen share?
You hit the screen share, it should come up. Right now, we're still seeing your...
You just see a plain daily E-mini, a December. Yeah, all right.
I don't know if it's yours.
Okay,
Glenn, you're not sharing your screen, Glenn.
All right, hold on. I thought I hit the button. Let me...
Green button on the left, and then you have to select either...
All right, let's try it now.
...either a window or your monitor.
And I've hit it. If not, I'll just give a verbal, but a picture goes 1,000. Yeah. What is it? About now? Can we see it?
Yes.
All right. So I like what Damon just said. And also, Michael, I'm going to have... I appreciate, because I'm also... I do Elliott. My approach at the top of my analytical totem pole is trend analysis, and a very, very close second, as viewers have, you know, in previous broadcasts I've indicated, is my market timing. And last but not least, in the top three is the Elliott wave structure. And you mentioned and pointed out a wave count that I had considered, but I have a different count, and I wanted to kind of give you a few bullet points as to why. But it has a similar, but the magnitude is different in terms of the projection that it generates. And again, I reiterate, I think we're all in accord more or less, today is a critical day. As far as I know, and I'm a technician like Damon as well, so I just for conversation and context, I present some of the fundamentals that I purposely have to research, because in my own accounts, I'm purely the charts. All right. But again, I'm not oblivious to an event that might align and reinforce what the charts are telling me. Here's how I'm viewing it. In these vertical blue lines, this line is the last projected time point I generated. So that's the past. That actually came in. November 30th was last Friday. The top came in on Monday. So I consider that a hit within it was Friday if we discount Saturday and Sunday. The reason I'm emphasizing that, let me get rid of it, is to show what's brought me to the present. And if I can accurately assess the status of the current market, I'm in a better position and my accuracy on the projection for the future goes up. All right. This is the next time point that I mentioned, December 19. I worked that out last night and then this morning, I wanted to see what type of events were occurring, and because I knew the Fed was meeting, and it happens. I'm not surprised that that's next Wednesday. All right, you can see this is the bottom that everyone's 2600 area, 2603, October 29. Notice that the market respected that. That's why this bottom formed on October last month, or 2 months ago now, because of the May 3rd bottom. All right, here's my thought. I want to be bullish for whatever reason, but the charts are telling me a number of reasons, but one in particular, that we're more likely, the odds are we're going to be in for a longer bear market. This top, the all-time high, if in the S&P it was the 21st, an alternate index, I'm not sure, the SPY might have been the 20th, but the all-time high in the equity sector in the U.S. was 920 or 21. If that's the case, and Michael, to you being an Elliottician, if that, I believe that was a fifth wave. What comes after wave five? ABC correction of one sort or another. There are a number of variations on that theme. So either this bottom here, everything from the all-time high to which prior to today's trade, October 29 was the lowest price, that's either a complete ABC correction, the end of the bear market of the cycle, and then everything to the right, everything subsequent from October 29 is the start of a new bull market cycle. And that's what I was thinking through about this point right here. I'm saying this is wave one of the new cycle. If this bottom here was the C, the end of the preceding cycle, and the top on November 8 or 11.8. If that's wave one, this was a classic wave two. That's about a 78 Fibonacci wave two, classic, perfectly formed textbook wave two. And this is looking like it's getting ready to go wave three, up until it wasn't right here. What do you make of that? Either, and then I said, well, you know, because you got to have a third wave projection. If this is wave one, my target for third wave is 2477. That would bring us way above off the screen. 2477 would be your 161 extension of wave one, if that's the case. Up until it wasn't. I still allowed, even through Friday's close, this past Friday, for the possibility that even discounting this little violation of the rule, you can't have a wave two take out the start of wave one. And then that's, and I said, well, I'll chalk that up to inertial overflight of price action up until today. Mm-hmm. I really can't discount and disregard this today.
Right.
Because okay, now here's the critical point I want to emphasize in terms of what I'm looking at to form and derive my view and opinion. Even if we close strong today, even if we close higher than Friday's close, it's a key reversal. And I agreed, some traders bought up the inventory and are buying it up. We might go up into the Fed meeting December 19th. But here's the issue with that. The runtime, here's my next projected time point. It's actually February 2nd. It's a Saturday. So you look at the surrounding dates to Friday, the Friday before is February. The amount of runtime for a third wave, third waves are very quick, very abrupt, high velocity. Maximally 75% of the time, that runtime of formation for wave three is going to be less than the sum of start of wave one from this point. If ostensibly, if this is the start of wave one, October 29, and this were wave two, whatever that runtime is, 75% of the time, theoretically, third waves do not exceed that. This is disproportionate. This amount of time from, assuming this is a true accurate number or turning point or point of inflection, December 19, next Wednesday, through here, even if we go up, it's more likely an internal fluctuation for, here's my thought. You had mentioned that everything here, this could be a one day down, a two, maybe some one of these, this triple top area in here, and then a three, in which case it would be give you a target way down, a bearish target. Right. I'm suspecting that if this is a five, here's the alternate wave count. Here's my argument for it, a bullish count, A, B, C, and then that's the bullish count. But that the price action we're seeing subsequent to this critical low is not consistent with a third wave. It was up until about here. And then when we failed, we couldn't break through that topping area. It's what's the alternative? Instead of thinking of from the all-time high down to October 29 is ABC, you can see the price action. Here's the one, little two, deep two, mm-hmm. upside
three,
down,
four, five.
Three, four, five. Of what? Of the A. Those are the five internals of the A wave.
Look at it this, how about this? One, two, three, four, five of one.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm saying. It could be. That could be, in which case, that's an even more bearish scenario, because then all of this, here's right. You could be, Michael, we're splitting hairs, but you could be correct. But here's why I'm thinking that it's the A, and all of this is a B, because it's five. It could be, here's the A, the B, the C, the D, the E, or wait a minute, A, B, C, D. I was expecting to move up of a triangle or a rectangle. Rarely, I don't as always or as frequently see rectangular or triangular in wave two. That's
right.
Why. But
right.
If it could, you know, on a continuum of odds and probabilities, it could. And as cuts, if this is all, like you said, the little fives of a one down to here, and all of this is an interesting two, then yes, we're in for dark times.
Here's another suggestion. Go back to what you're counting as wave A.
Down here.
Yeah.
This would be the end of A. Off of the all-time
And now we're going up right there. That's wave two.
Right. And then I thought that if this is two,
come back down.
This is the one of the three, two one of the three, and we're now in the three of the three.
Right.
And you do your Fibonacci, and that will get you down. But one way or the other, the combination, and this is primarily, you know, my emphasis on market timing, you know, that's the GAN stuff that I do. GAN's, the true essence of what GAN was saying is time and price are equivalent. Here's my argument why I'm longer term. I am, even though for fundamental reasons that my awareness of what's out there in the world, I still want to be bullish, the seasonal, the Christmas rally, et cetera, and all that. But the runtime, if we're still somehow in some type of wave two correction, even though it's not seeing price action in the real world befitting that, assuming that I'm maybe not seeing something, the runtime for wave three is very quick. This space, this amount of time from February, December 19 through here, February 2nd, that's more befitting of a C wave or a three to your argument. And so even if we go up into next week, I think that's just an internal and we're going to come down. The amount of time we would spend forming either a three could, well, if that's the case, if it's a three coming down, then...
Right.
you know, this, all I can say, I don't know, this is too far out, February 2nd, for me to determine what, you know, the significance. What I can, other than the, it's, this is the amount of time. That's a large amount of time. But that's what I'm looking at. It's either one of those two things. We're just seeing this inside bar with respect to the day before, Thursday and last Friday, and then today on the heels of it. Unless we see a quick turnaround, I see the case. It's either, as you say, we are already in a three wave that might have started with this top, or we might have, we're still in a three wave or a C wave, and these are just the internals, and then that would last, and we go all the way into the first week of February is my thought. So again, that I'm reaching this with a combination of combining what I'm seeing in the real world from a pure trend standpoint with my particular compartments of timing, and at trying to find the best fit and match it with what the real world, the system is doing. And if very often when I do that, I find some of the microstructure that Damon was talking about in terms of the violations or the respect of a given moving average or a system of averages and the volume price correlations, etc., when they tend to line up. So I typically start with the macro and then go down and look at that microstructure that some of the other panelists have mentioned. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's my thought. I just had not previously considered the fact that this could, you know, if this is your one, all of this is a two, which it could be, then yeah, to your point, Michael, we are in a three. And even if we rally into this week, as I'm suggesting we will, and then maybe top, you know, if the market doesn't like the whatever the Fed does next week, it's still just that could set us up for a three of a three of a, you know, right, of a third or of a C, either way. The scenario would be similar in direction, just different. If it's a three, we're going to go a little deeper. My target on the downside, if we are C wave, is 2477, which I think someone mentioned just above that. So yeah, that's my Fibonacci. If it's a C wave, if it's a three, it's going to be even a little deeper, clearly.
Right.
Yeah. Can I interject then?
But actually, David, hold on just a second.
Oh, okay.
Let me. I want to make sure that we include Jim and to get his reasoning for his call.
Well, we're certainly getting a nice seminar on the Fibonacci numbers, right?
We are. We definitely are.
Anyway, I'll be concise and to the point. The market is extremely important priced right now, like Damon was saying, and here's some of the reasons why. The VIX hit 26 today about, and now it's backed off. If this VIX started going 27, 28, or 30, then I think your 2580 would break. I've got a long-term moving average on a monthly graph that I've been looking at.
Uh-huh.
And it's in a rising formation. So when it's in a rising formation, that's a very constructive still. But in 2011 and in 2015, twice it was penetrated while it was kind of rising. And in both occasions, you lost 200 points about on the S&P. So to talk about the severity of where we are right now,
uh-huh,
if it breaks above the 2730 area on the VIX and we start taking out 2580, the risk to the downside is substantial. And I'm not the only guy who can read this graph. So I'm sure there are forces out there who would probably not like to see that. And if they could support the market at this point, I think they will. So watch your VIX, which is turned down a little bit, and watch your 2580, because if those two numbers get taken out, like Damon was kind of saying, but not saying, the risk on the downside could be very substantial. And based on this long-term graph that I watch, the three times that it happened since 2009, where it was substantially penetrated,
right,
the risk, although it was temporary, the washout was very severe. Now, having said that, that's not happened yet. So right now, I think the bet would be, in my view, in my opinion, that the market may snap back. To give you an example, I look at moving averages quite a bit. And the uh-huh, moving averages on Apple are up at 195 and 205. I'm not going to get bearish on Apple at 160, but I wouldn't mind being bearish at 223 and buy my puts and do my collars. But down here, getting bearish, this close to where the lows have been, and this close to where the 10 years at 2.8. I mean, if we break under 2580 and we go into that abyss, you know, you're going to be at 2.5 on the 10-year pretty fast.
Yes,
and like you say.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that, you know, this is a time, you know, if you get that nervous about positions, one thing you can investigate is replacing long positions with leaps or long-term equity options. At least then you've locked in prices and your risk is limited. So you know exactly what you've got on the board as far as risk, but you're not running a away from the market at the lowest prices we've been at in 52 weeks in most cases. But let's be clear, we've had a death cross on all the major indexes, the transports, the Russell, the NASDAQ, and the S&P. So to put a big smiley face on this thing here is not the way to go. But to think that we could have some kind of a rally is not off the table. But underneath is a very dangerous area, which I think is a word that Damon used. And of course, we're both sharing our opinions. We don't know what'll happen. But right. you'd be foolish not to think that there's substantial risk underneath the lows today and substantial risk above the highs on the VIX. And that's all I'm going to say.
Very, very well stated, Jim. Very well stated. And thank you. All three, thank you. I think what we've all contributed up to this point has been very, very valuable and hopefully valuable to people that have tuned in today to listen and to watch. I, again, do not disagree with anything that we said. But what I'm going to ask that we toss in, it seems that the discussion is kind of rallying around that there is not a, and I hate to use the word because Damon, I'm like you, I don't necessarily look at fundamentals, but I think that's where the change is happening and it's not being recognized or picked up or even given any credence by the status quo. The market continues to hang on to status quo. That because we've come off 300 points in the S&P from its high, that it's just a pullback and therefore we still, you know, everything's still the same. We still have this great market and that is nothing more than a correction. So the challenge that I toss out to people is like, when do you want to put in, and Jim, you're adding it, but that's more on a short-term basis by keeping an eye on the VIX and, you know, some of the other indicators that you use. So let's go into question four. And again, we're going to try to keep this a little bit shorter because, guys, we have about 12 minutes left for today. But what indicators influences your trading the most? And what I'm going to ask is that whichever indicator that you're going to talk about, that is it an indicator for short-term, long-term, mid-term, trend, swing? Try to put a little bit of, we're going to try to qualify a little bit on how that indicator is being used. And so, again, I'm going to begin with Damon. Let's try to keep our answers a little bit shorter. I absolutely love the degree of detail that is being given today. I think it's great, and it's great for the conversation. But if we can keep it short, because we don't want to run over. So, Damon, starting with you, what indicators influence your trading the most?
So, I'll just spit out a couple. You're looking right now, for instance, just this is a 30-minute, but it works on a daily or a weekly. You see those green dots and the red dots, right? Mm-hmm. I created my own reversal account of my own, and I also just give it free on the software. But you can see the red dots here, for instance, when it broke below the 30 low moving average, I used these moving averages. And you could see that it was a sell all the way down here, and then climbing the wall of worry with a little green buy, and then we sold off. Now we're in a buy again, and we're heading into a buy signal on my 30-minute. So I use moving averages. I like the 30 high moving average, 30 low with a 10 close. I use this, I call it a PAV reversal. It's my own that I programmed. And then down below, I use a 310 oscillator, which is Linda's, which is the three moving average minus, or the 10 moving average minus the three. And with a slope, with this line here is a 16 smooth. And then one other thing I do want to throw in, I do like candle volumes because volume is the only real-time indicator to confirm what I'm looking at. In this case here, we had a nice big volume candle with a spike, which tells me it's a climax to the downside and we're moving up with some good volume. You can see that, you know, right before the market, we rallied with like no volume. So those are the four things that I use along with some Keltners and some other things, but I don't want to confuse everybody. I would say those are top four. And of course, there's no doubt that I use pattern recognition. And I used to, years ago, no offense guys, I used Elliott and Gann and everything. Mm-hmm. But when I had five guys in a room looking at Elliott, they all had five different ways of looking at it. So for me, it wasn't as clear. You know, I might think it's one way, but you know, it can be taken so many different ways. So, and then Paul Tudor Jones, I used to execute for him in 1986. I remember I had all these things. I had the GAN fans. I had Elliott Wave. I had you name it. And when I met him in person and he showed me a overlay of the Dow from 1929, and it was a fairly basic chart. And I said, wow. And I had this highway of lines all over my, you know, my dailies. I pretty much tore it up and I went back to the basics. And so I keep it kind of simple that way. Okay. That's my way of looking at it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And yep. Glenn.
Right. Yeah. On the heels of what Damon just said, I am an advocate of keeping, what is it, the KISS principle, keep everything as simple as possible. I would qualify that by what Einstein said, but no simpler. You know, you got to, the degree of simplicity assists us as observers of the market so we can comprehend the incomprehensible, the infinite complexity of what we're seeing oftentimes. So, and clearly I do, and Damon, and I think everyone would agree, one of the, we constantly hear the critique of Elliott Wave in particular, of the ambiguity that's resident in that model. And clearly I get that. And a lot of that arises due to the graphic nature of the model. I think Elliott himself would turn in his grave because the way he developed it, if you go back and read the papers that he wrote in 1939, most of the practitioners, I would say less than 10% of practitioners of Elliott really do what he was talking about. But let me get to the point. Here's very simplistic. I developed years ago a simple moving average method of 50, 21, and an 8. Those are fib numbers. To develop the primary trend, because trend is the ultimate indicator. The market is the reality, obviously. It's a cliche. When the market and the 21 and the 8 are all resident above the 50, I'm looking for long opportunities. When all those three variables are below the 50, I look for the bearish side of the market. So that 50 moving average, simple average, serves as a gross distinguisher or differentiator between bull versus bear. You can, and it's applicable to all sectors, all markets. But I do that on the daily. Whatever that bias is as determined by that method, where I've got the price action, the market, the candle, the bar, whatever you're looking at, the 8 and the 21, where those three variables simultaneously are resident relative to the 50, on a daily, that determines my what I'll define to be a primary trend. And then I go down and take it down to an hourly. I'm looking to see the opposite bias occur on the hourly. I either will or I won't. If I don't, I wait for that to occur. And then I wait for what I call the 821 cross. I wait for the 8 to cross through in the direction of the 50, the 21 line, and that generates a signal. I tested that years ago, I mean, more than 19 years ago, on a spectrum of different asset sectors and instruments, equities, derivatives, etc. It works about 70% of the time on an equity base of 5K. All right. If, as a starting point, just as a pure trend definer, that's a starting point. The essence of what I'm looking then to do, and taking into account the problems, the inaccuracies of a model like Elliott Wave, if I see some wave structure that's corroborating the trend, or in other words, let me reverse that. If I start with I'm bullish or I'm bearish based on a simple moving average or any type of moving average paradigm, then what I'm going to do is look to see, do I have wave structure that's complementary? Do I think I'm ending a wave 2 and about to mark an onset of a 3, and it's a bullish 3 or vice versa? And then I'm looking to support or find two or three very, very different models, be it a pattern, a Fibonacci relationship, given the idea that no one of these things is going to be perfect. But as a pure start in homage to the trend, find out what the trend is, and you can use a simple moving average methodology to do that, and then look to see a couple of patterns, be it wave structure. That's what I do. What I think separates me, because I know most traders don't do market timing, I look at and generate time points based on a whole series of different types of models, primarily cycles. That's my area of research. So when I see time points that I projected out, and I've already got for the stock market, as we saw before, February 2nd, February 20, I've already worked out to June, March 1st, I then ask myself, is the wave count that I'm deriving, or the most plausible wave counts, how would they conceivably fit with some of the time points that I've projected? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Only if I see a fit that's creating some synergy will I go forward and look to execute. But that's, again, trend. I'm looking at a simple pattern that I think all of us have mentioned. You can look at the moving averages. You can then if you have a distinction between a bull and a bear, I'm looking for wave structure that would confirm it. If I happen to see some time points that are further confirmation, all three of those things are quite different. They're different ballparks. Then that suggests I have a higher probability exercise. So that's basically my MO, so to speak.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Jim?
Well, what I like to do, and of course, I just give you my opinion and my views on this, but I like to look at both sides of the coin. Now, the one side of the coin is going to be fundamentals. Like a big thing right now is you've got fiscal policy and you got monetary policy. The Fed is withdrawing from buying assets and shrinking their balance sheet. On the fiscal side, they continue to run up deficits through the roof. So obviously that's a problem. And so that's a fundamental. Now you've also got things like news. This week, we've got news in China. China's doing lousy. And we've got news in Europe. Europe is doing lousy. Now in China, they've got credit coming out, which is going to be a big thing because if they have contracting credit, that's going to be a problem. And they got retail sales. USA, it's got the price, the inflation numbers, CPI, PPI. I think they're going to start picking up. I think the tariffs are causing prices to rise. I think 3.7 unemployment. These people are going to goose people and they're going to hike prices and people are going to be surprised by the CPI. I could be wrong, but I think that's possible. And then, of course, retail sales. Now, in Europe, you got the ECB on Thursday. They're going to start talking like they're not going to buy assets anymore as much. And, of course, they're already weak. So that's big news going to be coming out in three different areas of the world. Right. And to not even pay any attention to that, I think is silly. So then I get over to the technicals. The technicals I like to look at, obviously the moving averages, they're based on price and time. How many people have an opinion? Everybody. But they can't deny price and they can't deny time. Then I try to use those moving averages as a way of trying to get entry and exit points. The VIX, I'm an option guy. Of course, I'm going to watch the VIX. If it's between 20 and 25, it's in the danger zone. Danger of what? Spiking up. If it's between 20 and 15, you're in neutral and the likelihood you're in a trading range is pretty good. And if you're under 15, you're probably in a nice bull market and the prices are going to probably appreciate. That's my view on the VIX. And then chart formations, you're always looking to look at patterns to see if you can get some turning points, like a low surrounded by a bunch of higher lows or a high surrounded by lower highs to get some kind of an idea of exhaustion. And then the RSI. Damon showed you a very good chart where the RSI was diverging, meaning we made a high without making a higher high on the RSI or one of those type of indicators. And that obviously is an exhausted type thing as well. Mm-hmm. And then, basically I try to, not get too emotional. Like right now, everybody's, panicking and going nutty a little bit today, but the long-term moving average that I watch on the S&P is still rising. And while it was penetrated just a little bit, we're back above it again. So this is not a time, in my view, to get extremely negative down here. In fact, it's a place to start looking for the long side. Now, if we break this area right here, you've got to obviously abandon. And then the next level, which would be interesting to me, might be as low as 150 to 200 points underneath where we are. So right here, I think, is an interesting level. And then, of course, if we go into the abyss, it could be into the 2400, 2450 level before I'd be interested on the long side again. But let's be frank, the death crosses are not good for the market. So we've got to start recalibrating our expectation. And I think the monetary policy and the fiscal policy divorcing from each other is a problem. So that's pretty much my 2 cents.
And I think it was $2. So I think it was very well stated. So thank you very much. And actually, thank you, Damon. Thank you, Glenn. And those are great, great information. And I'm hoping that everybody's really kind of picked up on this today. I personally use, but again, looking at a time factor. So in what amount of time are we really looking at for trading? And because my focus has shifted to intraday, I really only carry core positions in the bonds and in gold. And so when I'm doing the intraday trading, I'm really looking at a stochastic momentum index to give me, is it exhausted? Is it going to turn? And that could be turning from bullish to bearish, bearish to bullish. And it could only be for the next 10 minutes, for all I know, but again, because of the time factor. But I think what even on my, I'm looking at a monthly, and I looked at the weekly and looked at the daily, again, using the same stochastic momentum indicator, on a monthly basis, it's pointing straight down, which tells me that there is more to come. Now, whether that's going to happen today, tomorrow, or next week, Remember, we're looking at something on a monthly basis. So everything that we've said today continues to be important and relevant to what is going to happen for the balance of this week. So I'm going to leave it as follows. We've gotten some very important levels that the market should not break if indeed we're going to consolidate higher. But I think what we need to bear in mind, and I think all of us kind of put that out there, is that it is a consolidation. It is not necessarily the beginning of a new bull move that's going to go substantially higher. So at least that's kind of what I'm picking up. So I'm going with that. It's like we've got our levels. We know what we need to look for. If the market does break back below 2,600 and in fact breaks below 2,580, we got the answer. We know we should then figure out what's going to happen for the balance. Now, I'm going to have to wrap it up here. I'm going to just ditto what David's going to say when he comes back in. You guys are great. I think you've added extreme value to anybody who comes in and listens to us today. I think the information and the indicators and everything has been fantastic. And the support behind what you've said has been top notch. So I personally want to thank Damon Pavlatos from FTP Trading or FP Trading. And I want to thank Glenn Thompson from Pacific Academy. And I want to thank Jim Kenny from Options Professor. You guys are top notch. I really enjoyed moderating for you guys with you guys today. It has been highly educational, very, very informative. And thank you all. And David, turning it back over to you.
Individually want to do a quick closing statement about your
sure. We can do that too. I didn't know how far over you're gonna let me go over.
Yeah,
so let's do that. Starting with Damon, we're just going to do a little closing statement about, again, who you are and how people can get a hold of you.
Sure. And my name is Damon Pavlatos, as you know by now, and if you were listening. So I am the CEO, owner of Future Path Trading, I also own Photon Trader, Future Path. Of course, you can get a hold of me for any questions on what I was talking about. If there's any interest in the brokerage side, you can call me. Or Photon Trader, the chart that I was showing you, the platform. But we offer multiple platforms. So if you want to get a hold of me, there's my email. You can email me or you can call me direct. Currently, I'm kind of on the road a little bit here, but I return all the calls if I don't get them immediately. And same with the emails. But any questions, you can even call me up just to ask me questions about the current material. And then one other thing, if you're interested in any webinars that I'll be doing in the next 2-3 weeks, they're free. You could just let me know, send me an email, and we'll put you in the queue for the webinars.
Great. Thank you very much. And Glenn.
Right. Once again, I'm with Glenn Thompson with Pacific Trading Academy. You can reach us at our website if you'd like to learn more about some of the programs and curriculum that myself and some of my coworkers provide. PacificTradingAcademy.com. Unfortunately, we don't have I've been after the guys at the company, our computer staff, to get a graphic so we can have that. Hopefully sooner than later we'll get that. But the toll-free number, if you'd like to call directly, 800-339-8588. 800-339-8588. Or just access the website directly, PacificTradingAcademy.com. As I mentioned at the outset, I'm primarily a technician. In my own accounts, am focused on E-mini and Forex. But that said, the technical approach obviously allows a broader array of instruments you can teach. So the only thing I don't teach, because I'm not set up for it, ironically, I started there, is the fundamental approach. We have other, some of my coworkers do that. But if you're interested in learning basic TA, I'm happy to give you more details and you can reach us there on that regard. So a pleasure to be here again, Michael. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And Jim.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. Just reminding you, I'm Jim Kenny, and I'm a graduate of Boston College, and I've been educating investors for decades on the uses and the risks of options. And I'm more than happy to share my opinions every Friday on my podcast. So I would say that you could attend and tell your friends to attend by going to Option, O-P-T-I-O-N, professor.com, and basically go to the link. And also, if you'd like to email me at optionprofessor@gmail.com, I would be able to help you there as well. Again, every Friday, we look forward to seeing you guys there, and I'll share whatever I can with you. Thanks a lot.
Very welcome. And I am Michael Filigera with LogicalSignals.com. If you would like to get a hold of me, you can always email me at Michael@LogicalSignals.com or michael@mjf1partners.com. Either way, that'll get to me. And as already been stated, I always answer my emails if you have a question or if you have an interest. And thank you again. This has been great. I'm back to you, David.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Just want to remind everyone to be sure to search for Timing Research on your favorite podcast directory and subscribe. And subscribe on YouTube to get updates on future shows. Also, join us tomorrow, Tuesday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time for the next episode of Analyze Your Trade. Jeremy Newsom, Mike Bassani, and Neil Batho will be back for that one. And just want to thank all my guests again for this week. Damon Pavlatos of Future Path Trading, Glenn Thompson of PacificTradingAcademy.com, Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com, and Michael Filiguera of LogicalSignals.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.